even in a workshop of 10 people, there will not be two that look like they've been on the same workshop.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
They look like they've had different instructions because their own stuff comes out.
Yeah. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking, just what we all need. With me, Alice Sheridan.
Me, Louise Fletcher.
And today we're joined by Karen Stamper. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Hi, Louise. Hi, Alice.
Hi. So nice to see you.
And you.
So if you haven't come across Karen's work before, she is another artist based in the UK. In 2018, she started a world tour with sketchbooks, which I really want to hear about. And this led to a demand for online courses, very organically, no big business plan. But we thought, even before all of this kicked off, so we are recording in March 2020, and even before this virus situation kicked off, and it's going to make online learning, I think, even more relevant, we just wanted to talk to Karen about how, as an artist, you can build and grow just this idea of sharing, I suppose, what you learn into sharing with other artists, and you know how it can all develop, really. So how did it start for you?
Well, I was a teaching secondary in school for quite a few years, but before that I worked in the travel with tourism, so I was quite comfortable working with groups of people and with traveling. And whilst I was teaching, I started organizing art and yoga holidays in the south of France in the school holiday time. So I went headlong straight into full 1 week holidays with people where I taught them 3 hours a day. We did art workshops.
And that, so that was adults. And before then you'd be teaching in school.
So I was still teaching. I was still teaching full time in school. Yeah. And I wanted, you know, I was an artist, I was a traveler and a teacher, and I wanted to bring the three together. And also I taught yoga. So I thought, well, let's rent a house in the south of France, fill it with people, and I'll teach them everything. So I did, you know, we had breakfast, we had yoga, we had 3 hour workshops, we did a little bit more in the afternoon, we had dinner, and it was wonderful. I did it for 2 or 3 weeks in the year, in the school holiday. But after about 5 years, I was exhausted because I was doing everything. You know?
Yeah.
And it was pre-internet. It was just as the internet was starting. So I advertised in magazines and filled those weeks easy for about 12 to 16 people.
So what date was this then?
This was around 2004, 2006.
Okay.
Not so good with my dates, but yeah, about that time.
Yeah.
And so then I thought, well, this is a good business. I'll give up teaching and I'll rent 10 weeks from May to October, which I did. Knew nothing about marketing. And of course, the same amount of people just filled those 10 weeks, basically. So
everybody just spread out, basically.
Yeah, I can imagine Louise is tearing her hair out at this one. Yeah. I just thought, well, I'll advertise it. It will fill up. So yeah, some weeks.
I was actually thinking what a great idea it was, though.
Yeah, I mean, empty house, fill it with people. It was great. And the house I used had a fantastic art studio, so we could make a mess. But yeah, then in those 10 weeks, sometimes we sat in an empty house for a week. The next week, we might have had two people. You know, and of course, those people coming on the holiday expected to be with a group. And then I'd have to say, hello, welcome. It's just you two this week. Ooh, okay. I cringe now when I think about it. But we had great fun. And then after about 5 years, so I decided that was enough. And I was still teaching part-time at this point. So I then started to, I then started teaching workshops locally, just one day workshops. But this is a lesson to learn. Don't be too broad. You know, I was teaching them how to draw, how to paint. I was basically being an art teacher, but for adults. And it was fine, but I wasn't making a connection. It wasn't meaningful for me. Yeah. So gradually I developed it into sketchbook workshops because that was my strength. Yeah. And after teaching in France, you know, I had 2 carloads of equipment. I had all my painting equipment, I had all my yoga equipment. And then when you start reducing to a sketchbook, So now the workshops I run, people just work in a sketchbook. We have lots of materials, but it's a much smaller scale, much more manageable. And I'm not run ragged trying to teach them portraits, landscapes, everything in one workshop, which was a bit silly.
Yeah,
so that's a great thing.
That's the thing that always put me off doing any kind of before I had the studio space was just this idea of the sheer quantity of stuff that I would need to provide to people. And I think as well, the other block for me was the fact that I felt I have to give everything, every material, every instruction, everything needs to be available. I've got to have it all there so that nobody's disappointed and any single possible thing they ask me, I'm going to be able to give it to them. And, you know, that's just way too big. I can't do that at all. So that's interesting that getting more specific has helped. But also I want to go back to something you said about this switch from teaching in school, where obviously you have a huge kind of extended curriculum, but also teaching adults and how that is different. Because my experience from that I've mentioned before as a learner is in learning the piano. So I learned the piano when maybe I didn't really want to do it when I was a child. And then picked it up again as an adult when my daughter wanted to learn. And as an adult learner, I felt like I had a lot more responsibility, ability to have a discussion with the teacher and take with it for what I wanted. But I can also imagine that adults often come with a lot more worries, preconceived. Yeah, I wasn't going to say baggage, but yeah, okay, let's go with it. Baggage and concerns about how they learn. So that must be a really different experience. So how do you manage that, or how do you encounter that?
And how they learn, and also they desperately want it to be right. You know, when we go on a workshop, we want to go home with something to show people. And I know I often say, well, when you show them this sketchbook at home, you know, somebody's going to say, you paid to go on that course? And is that what you did all day? But with the sketchbook workshop, a lot of it is freeing up. It's not how to draw at all. So we splash around and play around with lots of techniques to prepare the pages of the sketchbook. So I find with adults, if I can get them hooked in that first 5-10 minutes of working, then they're totally with me. Yeah. Whereas when it used to be, we're all going to learn to draw, you know, people get frustrated that they can't make it look like what they're drawing in real life, you know, that whole thing. Whereas the way all I'm doing is teaching the way I work, you know.
Yeah.
So we start the sketchbooks with collage and some inks, and we've got lots of different marks on there. So there's always something to respond to. Whether you make that more realistic or more abstract or just keep playing or add collage over it, there's always a way forward which adults need to find their own way. So I am teaching a lot in a workshop. I'm letting people find their own way through the techniques that I give them. Whereas when you're in school, you are teaching, this is what we're doing today.
Yeah.
I was very lucky in the department I taught in, the other teacher and I were very, very much on the same track. And our main aim was to teach those kids to be independent learners. So it was, you know, it's that way of teaching in that you do some things and you find out a bit more and you develop and then I'll step in and help you.
Yeah.
And that's how I teach the adults. As soon as they're with me with the first bits that frees them up, then it's almost a bit more individual learning. You know, after, go on.
And I was going to say, and there's also a commitment thing, isn't there? And with a workshop, you know, you're in it. Firstly, it's something usually that you've committed to financially, but in your case, it's you're in a physical space. So if I'm hitting a tricky patch in my sketchbook pages or in my painting, if I'm on my own at home, very tempting to say, I'm going to call it a day now. Do you know what really needs doing? I've got two loads of washing that absolutely have to be put on now. I'm going to go and do that instead because I don't. Whereas, and I felt this too, you know, when I've been away at workshops, you keep going because everybody else is doing it. So it's I'm not going to be the one that stops. So
cries.
You get this kind of, cry. You get this sort of momentum going, which carries you through, which I think is a huge, huge benefit of, you know, wherever you are in your learning, of learning alongside others, that you see what other people are doing. You share that, keeps you going.
Yeah.
Can I just ask something, Karen? Sorry. I wanted to just ask. So you said that the adult learners, you know, you have to get them in that first 5 to 10 minutes. One of the things I struggle with, well, not struggle with, but one of the challenges I have with the people I teach is getting them past that. I want a good result.
Yeah.
What do you think are the tricks as a workshop leader? What is it that you do that allows people to feel free in, you know, right from the beginning?
Well, we open our sketchbook up to 10 sides at least, and then we throw a lot of ink over it, you know, and there's lots of people, you see people go, oh,
I know.
Can't I? You know, after we've put a few of the, I lead them through the techniques step by step. So usually in each workshop, you've got somebody saying, but what's going to happen? Why are we doing this? What's going to, and we say, no, just let go. And, you know, and then what really helps, I think they look at the neighbor and there'll be someone throwing ink and not giving a toss about anything, you know, and I think they tend to think, okay, I'll stay with her. I'll trust her for a little bit, see how this goes. Yeah. And I've never had anybody then say, well, what's it all about? Why did we do that? You know, there's some point, I think, when the ink starts to run over all the collage techniques and you get beautiful edges and lines. So even those people who want something very realistic can appreciate how the beautiful marks they're making. So it opens them up in that more abstract way. And it's a little bit, well, it's obviously connected to what Nicholas Wilton's always saying, you know, keep going on it. And especially with my work, if you don't like that bit, well, stick a piece of collage on top or, you know, put some gesso over it. That really frees people up as well because it's got the collage element.
And also some really clear steps, though, at the beginning.
Yes.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, so if you know, okay, I've got to put ink down and then collage.
Then this. Yeah, so there's probably, I mean, the first, if it's a two-day workshop, probably 3/4 of the first day is me leading, you know, but I have to say, stop the gesso, stop putting the tape on, you know, because we say, just put put 3 pieces of masking tape as collage, you know, and they've got 20, 30 pieces because people get so excited about these long books. So really I'm holding people back rather than, you know, having to push them forwards, say, rein it in a little bit, you know. And it's the excitement of being so free. It really is magical. I mean, you must see it with the people you work with. But when somebody starts realizing they can make marks and not worry, and it will, you know, we turn it into something, whether it's buildings or allotments, that the marks then start speaking to you and, you know, it starts to work that way. But it's magic.
It is an amazing thing to get to do, I think, to teach other people. Now, I was supposed to come on your workshop and I was really looking forward to it in York or near York.
Yeah.
It's not happening now, temporarily.
Oh, the Lund one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a big shame. But that's one of the things that we were interested in talking about is all of these cancellations that are happening, obviously, are affecting people's ability to teach now. And you had already taken your workshops online, which I've not actually taken one, but now that I can't come to an in-person one, I am going to sign up and do one of your online ones, because why not? It'll be really good fun. How do you find that when you're not there to get to say, okay, let's, you know, do it this way and be free and don't worry, when you're not there, reassuring presence, how have you overcome that, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Okay, so I've set up my online workshops with Coursecraft. It's an umbrella company. And a friend said to me about 10 years ago, make an online workshop and you can reach out to people. And it took me, my first one was 2017, I think. And it was a Nicholas Wilton video on how to make videos that enabled me to do it, because it's a technology, you remember, that was putting me off. Yeah. So I've made them all, and you can really see my hands. You know, it's actually better than being in a workshop because you can see the work really closely.
Yeah.
And there are lots of short videos, like 2-3 minute videos. You can ask questions in Coursecraft, but also I've got a Facebook private group, Sketchbooks with Karen Stamper, that everybody shares their work, and it's the same as you know, it's the art community. Everybody steps in and advises each other and helps each other, and it's wonderful. You know, like, you must find sometimes there's a question, by the time I've got to it, 10 other people have stepped in there and helped So I love that whole community that the internet has enabled us to have. And if somebody's really reaching out, you know, they'll send me an email. But generally, it's just been little messages and the Facebook group, and we've got through it that way. And then a lot of those people still come on a physical workshop as well.
Yes.
Yeah, because they just get a taste for it, and then they want more.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating how we, you know, even you with your experience of teaching and learning, we all have these little hurdles that we have to overcome. It's like, oh, well, how am I going to do the video, do the editing, get it set up? Do I need to buy a tripod? Yeah, we'll balance it on a pile of books, or yes, buy the damn tripod, you know, because that's going to make your life easier. And I think those things can actually end up being quite fun and creative as well. A bit time consuming.
Yeah. I mean, I take probably 6 weeks out, you know, in the beginning I say, oh, 6 weeks, I want to be in my studio. But then you have to dedicate that time to making that online workshop. And yeah, mine is pretty basic. It's my iPad on a wiry arm and lamps. And a friend of mine made one that was very slick, and she got friends to film it and everything, and I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to stick with how I am. It's working. And you know, I've got the squirrel running on the studio roof, and there's a bird sat outside tweeting, but it's all part, you know, that's me doing
it's, but like, it's you're in real life, isn't it?
It is.
You know, it's how it is. So and I think actually we're thankfully we're in this realm where that's how people like it. Like, the fascination with how other artists work is that I want to see how it really is. I want to see how you handle it when it goes wrong. I don't need it to be beautifully filmed. I need to be able to see what you're doing, but I don't need it to be beautifully filmed. And actually, if it's all beautifully filmed, I find that a little bit off-putting, because it makes it feel really distanced from me and where I am. And you know, even with other online courses I've taken, when it's so slickly put together, it just makes me feel like it's all too planned out, not responsive enough. And I just like it when, you know,
it goes wrong a little bit.
You know.
I mean, I like people to feel that they're actually in the studio, really. You know, that's my space. This is, you know, and I've turned around and I'm showing you some techniques, and now I'm going back to my painting. That kind of setup.
Yeah, I think in general now in internet marketing, everybody in different realms is beginning to understand that just sitting down with even bad lighting and talking is better than slick filming, because everyone's got tired of feeling like they're being sold to or persuaded that you've got the perfect life and the perfect setup, and just that you haven't.
Do you not want to be Tony Robbins? Don't you want to be Tony Robbins?
I don't think I'd be a very good Tony Robbins. So I think one of the things I thought would be interesting for us to just chat about for a few minutes is, since we've all been told to stay inside and not, you know, mingle with other people, and all the workshops are cancelled, all of a sudden there's this whole influx of artists saying, how can I teach online workshops? And some people want to do what we do and reach all sorts of people all over. Some people just want to take what they were going to do in their local church hall or wherever and find a way to deliver it long distance to the same group of people that already signed up, which is an interesting idea. And that's something I don't think any of us have ever tried. But what do you both think about this kind of rush to do this? Is it a good thing?
I think it's great. I think if you've already have a workshop in place that people were booked up to do, if you can find any other way to deliver that information to people online, they're going to want it, right? Because they've already said they want it. And then, you know, we're all fed up. Like, you know, I was going to come and do something, and the fact that it's now happening, I'm like, what a bummer. You know, there will be another way to do that. So I think from the point of view of people who were ready to come and do it, they're going to be just as disappointed that they can't come as you're disappointed that you can't deliver it. And as a result, I don't think people will be expecting things to be slick and polished. There are ways that you can show it. What do you need? You need a mobile phone with a camera and a way to do it. Now, we are talking and recording on Zoom at the moment, which apparently unsurprisingly, is having slight keep-up issues. Not if you record locally, but if you record to the cloud. But that is a way of communicating with people. But I think that there are two parts of this, aren't there? There's how you physically show somebody what you're doing, and there's the kind of group communication element. Is it worth separating out into those two things?
You really do need two separate things, don't you? The only thing I found for group communication in any kind of training that works online is Facebook. And people always say, but can't we do it? You know, somebody will always ask, can't you do this somewhere else other than Facebook? If you do, people don't join in the same way. And so if you have a forum, or if you try something like Patreon, you can try those things, but most people won't be there. But because people, especially in our age group, amongst the slightly older age group, spend their lives on Facebook, then people are there, they join in, they chat. So for the group communication side of it, I think that's the only option.
What about a Zoom meeting room where everybody can see each other like this?
If Zoom keeps operating at a good level, because I know, it's, you know, like you say, it's a bit overwhelmed at the moment, isn't it?
It's overwhelmed with storage in the cloud, but it's not overwhelmed if you store it, if you save it to your own system.
Now, how many participants can you have, though? Because I found
three.
Zoom cost prohibitive when I got to.
Yeah.
I couldn't do more than, one call 40. I did. Yeah, yes. So we're talking here
if you're
about
paying.
Small groups then.
Yeah.
We're talking about if you've only got a small group, you can do that. But if it's larger than that, like Karen's classes, for example, would be more.
Have they changed the rules then? Because it used to be free for groups up to 40 minutes.
No, it is for three people, though, only because we're trying to do a group on tonight with friends. And it's up to 40 minutes, three people only.
They have changed the rules on that then.
Yeah. So that's a bit up in the air at the moment, I think. I have had a couple of people asking how to join Facebook, you know, people who've never bothered with it, but they now want to for the community, for yoga and for art. So there may be a few more people now, but then they will go on Facebook and they will see all the other stuff. That's going to upset them more than anything. But I said, you know, just go on and look for that group and nothing else. But so maybe that might work.
So the other thing is YouTube live streaming.
Yeah. I haven't tried. Louise is doing that, are you?
I've never done that. No, I've used YouTube. I've uploaded videos, but that's it. I've got no idea.
Me too.
So you can actually YouTube live stream and then embed the copy for that on a website page.
Ah.
So you can live stream an unlisted video so everybody can see it live. And then you can put it on a website page, like with a normal YouTube embed code. So that's getting a little bit more technical.
Yeah.
But again, if you think about that, if you did that, you still know where for everyone to discuss.
See it.
Set up a private Facebook group. You can stream live in Facebook and people can chat. Yeah. And this is what I always come back to. I mean, when I started my online course, the first time I did it, I just did it in Facebook. I didn't even bother with anything because I didn't know all the technology. Yeah. And it was okay just to do it in a Facebook group. The difficulty came with tracking payments and letting people into the group and not having a system for that. When it was a small group of people, so it was okay. But as it would get larger, that would get a bit time consuming. But other than that, I found it really good. So if you want to do a workshop for, say, 20 people, 10 people, I think a private Facebook group would be really the easiest way to do it, even though it's not slick. It's like it's got everything you need.
Probably, and people can chat quickly as you're doing it. You can keep an eye on the chat, can't you?
The only thing you can't do is I think it's only two people you can have on screen together, isn't it? So people would... If people had a question, each one can come on with you, but you can't do this. Yeah. We're on Zoom and we're all seeing each other and you can't do that.
there's going to be a lot of steep learning curves.
But it's quite a good thing to get. I think often, like you said yourself, it was a long time between that jump of I could take this workshop online.
8 years.
To actually doing it. So for some people, this is going to be the thing that pushes them into doing something that will be a great result. But I think you're right, Louise. Keeping it really simple, Facebook is the option. But there might be some things where people, all they want to do is to, you know, have a video, and then you can just upload it to YouTube if you want to. If there's something that you just want to share or teach. So, for example, if you've got a course booked or had a course booked for teaching people, you could create a video saying you don't have to do massive editing on it. Create it as a single video, upload it to YouTube as an unlisted video, so it's not publicly available to everybody. And then all you do is send that link to people who are enrolled on your course. So you don't need to get into this whole online learning platform thing if you don't want to.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the Zoom website, and it's got tips. How to hide your messy room for a Zoom video conference.
We've not tried that.
Five tips for working on home for the first time. I'm trying to find out what their rules are for groups, but made me laugh.
I think one of the things that I was saying to somebody the other day is, and this goes back to what Karen said about her French villa experience, that it's people ask, I've had quite a few people ask me how to do online workshops in the past, even before all this started. And I always say to them, the first thing is to build the community, find followers, get to have people who want to learn from you before you even think about selling an online workshop. Because the one group is somebody had a workshop planned, people paid for it, and they want to deliver it online. That's straightforward. Or you have a local following and you want to keep teaching them. But if you want to do something like Karen's done, where she's put this program online and then attracting people to it, you really need to first think about building the basis for that. Who are the people who are going to buy it? And for lots of us, we've never done that because we've been focused on in-person stuff. So I think that's another learning curve, which isn't that hard to learn, because Alice, you learned all that from just yourself. Without that being part of your background. It just takes reading some books, watching some videos, working out. All the knowledge is available for free on how to build an audience, and it doesn't have to cost money. But what it does cost is time. And so when I was building my, trying to build an audience, I wrote 2 blogs a week, made a video a week, and that was before the podcast, and put them out on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube, and just worked really hard for nothing for about 10 months before I said I had anything to sell. I think it was about 8 months, actually. And I personally paid for advertising, which lots of people might not want to do, but I took savings and paid for advertising just to get people to read my blogs, because I thought they were good. And if people read them, they'd follow me, and then they'd become part of my audience. But for somebody else, it might not be blogging, it might be podcasting or videos or whatever. But you do have to work on how can I get followers if you don't already have that. And some people already do.
Yeah, and I think that is a great as a longer term strategy if this is something that you really want to build in. But I think if you're listening to this and you don't have that and you're wondering what you can do right now, today, I think there are other ways that you can do it without that. And I think personal outreach, like I say, I mean, we've been trying to come up with ideas of the way that people can deliver, you know, courses that they might already have booked in person. Ask the people who were booked on your course, would you like me to investigate that? If I can find out a way to do it and deliver it to you on video, would you like to take part that way as an alternative? Ask people, simply reach out to people and be direct. If you don't have anything already booked in and it's something that you're thinking of doing, the same thing applies. Yep. Talk to people directly. Ask people who are on your mailing list. If you can, get some kind of buy-in if it's going to be something that you want to charge for, either new or as a replacement. Make sure that you get some kind of buy-in. So, Karen, when you do in-person workshops, you ask for a deposit from people. Yep. And it's a way of checking that they're serious. Otherwise, all we're doing is fielding kind of lots of inquiries. You can do the same thing for this. So you could say to people, I'm thinking of putting this together. I need to investigate what the tech is. It might look something like this. Do you still want to do it? If you do, please, can you give me a £20 deposit today? And when I get 10 people signed up, then I'm going to go away and create it for you. And I think that kind of step level this is where we've got to be a little bit flexible and move on our feet a bit and just be specific, ask people directly.
Mm. And those people will come back for more. You know, once with mine, they've done one course, now they're coming back for the second and third. You know, once they trust you and it's worked. So it's definitely worth
speaking out. I'm actually volunteering to pay my £20 deposit, Karen, if you're going to do the Love Studios workshop in a private Facebook group. I will be there. I mean, you could do that, couldn't you? You have the audience already built in that you could approach people and ask them, and you could do that.
Yeah, and I just think at this time, it's really important to remember that actually we, you know, our immediate response to anything like this, and we can see it in people panic buying and things at the moment, is this incredible kind of contract, draw everything in, you know, bring up the drawbridges, shut the boundaries down. And it makes sense, you know, from a safety point of view, everything's going to happen. The world's going to end. The economy's going to go into free fall. Shut up. We can't all sit at home and do nothing for the next 4 months. Just not going to happen. Things are going to develop. And it doesn't matter if you don't have the answer to this right now. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure everybody else is in the same... My brain is exhausted at the moment. It's changing on a, you know, daily basis. But people are adapting already. Like, people who do kids' activity classes are adapting. They're doing it on YouTube live streams.
Yesterday and the day before, I live in a terrace house. We've all got small gardens. And I've got 10 to 15-year-olds at either side. So the day before, we did a yoga session for half an hour. Mums and dads came out as well. And yesterday, because my studio's there, we blasted up the music and we all just danced like crazy for half an hour.
Yeah.
Today, the girls are organising. We're going to do the Macarena.
Yeah.
It's wonderful that, you know, the parents are saying, oh my God, just the kids outside and the parents, just for half an hour to laugh and move. And these little communities are all, whether it's in your garden or online, good things will come out of all this, won't they?
Yeah, and I also think that things will just develop physically. So, you know, at the moment, people are racing around the supermarket in Italy at the moment, supermarkets are fully stocked, they are open, people are queuing with distancing involved, they're letting a few people into the shops at a time. It's just a new way of doing things. We don't know what it's going to look like. The neighbour who I just spoke to, at a distance, had just been to an outside exercise class in the park. She says, I go every week.
You know, nothing's changed.
We were all still there. We just did it with a bit more space between us. Mm. And I actually wonder, you know, in art workshops, we're not talking about mass gatherings where we're standing clustered together in a pub shouting in each other's faces because the music is so high. Once everybody starts to get a little bit of a grip and a handle on this and an understanding more about how it works, there will be ways where, with the right precautions in place, I hope that some of these things can pick up again.
So, it will.
Yeah, I just, you know, I get it at the moment, but let's just...
put it in perspective a little bit, isn't it? Even though it's unknown.
A bit. And, you know, I understand that everybody is fearful. Of course I do. Just interestingly, while we've been talking, I've looked up Zoom. Zoom still says that the basic level is free for hosting up to 100 participants, unlimited one-to-one meetings, but the limit is 40 minutes on group meetings.
Well, we set up last night and they said only for 3 participants.
So maybe their website isn't up to date. But even if you want to do more than 3 participants, it's $11.99 a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're doing this for a workshop as a revenue raising thing, $11.99 a month is worth paying. If it's going to replace your income from workshops and this is an alternative way of doing it, this comes under the category of sometimes, you know, you have to spend money in order to provide the services that you were going to provide. Maybe it's cheaper than hiring the church hall.
Yeah.
Yep, it is.
Quite significantly. I mean, my church hall is 150 quid a day.
Yep.
So, you know, that there are just, you know, we've got to learn to slice and dice a little bit, I think. Okay, so having done some of the logistics and hopefully given you a bit of encouragement to see what's out there and what you can do and give yourself the time and just start to explore these things, you had a great set of tips for people. And I really like the first one, and it kind of ties into what you were saying earlier, Karen, about not trying to be too general, you know, not trying to teach everybody everything. But this is quite funny. You said, you have to actually like people and want to share your knowledge.
Well, it's amazing how many people think I'll teach because that will make me some money.
Yeah.
You know? And they don't actually genuinely like teaching. Well, I saw that a lot in school. Or particularly like people, you know. But I do love people. I love community. And, you know, I've always worked with people. So I'm always so excited and interested to see what they do in their sketchbooks. And each one's so different. And that is a buzz and that feeds me. But some people, you know, if you're doing it just for the money, it will show, basically.
Okay, so I don't know if I like teaching because I've never taught before. So if you've never taught before, yeah. How do you know if you're going to like teaching? Are there some questions that you can ask yourself that you think? So the first one is, am I doing this just for the money? And again, at the moment, for lots of people, that might be yes. So maybe the alternative question at that point is, what other ways can I consider making some money? It doesn't have to be workshops. So I saw somebody yesterday who's been doing anyway this beautiful project, 100 small paintings, perfect at them. And I think, you know, those were done as a personal project, but it might be easier for you to create small postable work that's available for people. People still need treats, like even at times of crisis, they like to give themselves, like we sit down and watch, well, I don't watch EastEnders and there's going to be less of that at the moment because they're not filming it anymore. But, you know, the point is, you know, we still have our hard treats that we build into the day. And for some people, if they can buy a small piece of artwork that is going to arrive in the post, what lovelier thing. It might not be that workshops are the solution, but so if I've never taught before, how do I know if this is going to be a skill set that I am any good at? What questions can I ask myself?
Are you happy to share, really?
Okay.
You know, so if you are, can you share without worrying that someone's going to steal things from you? You know, you've got to genuinely, you look at Nicholas again, you've got to genuinely want to share. And if you're sharing, and if you're sharing with the love of something you do, it comes across and people will get involved with that. They'll see your enthusiasm and hopefully that will enthuse them. But even if you say if you didn't want to teach, but if you were sharing little videos of you doing some technique, you don't have to talk to camera, do you? You have to look down and say, I'm going to apply some paint here. I'm going to scratch a line here. This is what I'm doing. You know, that's teaching in a way, isn't it? It's just sharing.
Yeah.
So that's not actually telling somebody how to do something, you know. They can learn from you by just watching what you do. And then if that feels okay and you feel you can teach a bit more, that's a gradual way in.
Yeah, and I think there are a few worries and maybe fears and nervousness to overcome. So you said, can you share without worrying? And I think a lot of people have a worry that if they share the way they work and their processes, one of the worries is everybody's going to therefore copy me and their work is going to look like mine. How do you handle that?
Everybody does it in their own way in the end, don't they? You know, if somebody is doing something like yours, it might look like that for the first few times and then it will eventually, they will start to find their own interest. I've never really had somebody, you can't really copy mine.
No.
You know, there's so many layers and different things going on. And it's, even in a workshop of 10 people, there will not be two that look like they've been on the same workshop.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
They look like they've had different instructions because their own stuff comes out.
Yeah.
So And I think if somebody does something identical to mine, then, you know, often people say, oh, I saw so-and-so, does it look like yours? But leave them. They will find their way. You know, you have to let it go, because we're all, nothing's new, and we're all doing it in our own way, aren't we?
Yeah.
No technique is new. It's the way you do it.
I love that. I love that, because I've seen people be really precious about that. They think they want to teach, and then they get really upset when somebody copies them for a little while. But like you say, it's always only for a little while.
Yeah. And you're on your path, and you've got your people in your community, and they'll be on theirs. You're not, your people aren't going to cross over.
Yeah. And the other thing is, they'll always be copying the past you, because you've already moved on.
Yeah.
You're moving constantly. So I agree. Yeah.
And the other thing that kind of came up for me when you're talking about filming is people worried, if they're thinking about taking this online, about how they look on video, how they look on camera. And I think a lot of it, for the vast bulk of it, as you say, if the camera is directed at the work, it's not a fashion shoot.
No.
You don't have to have perfectly manicured hands to do this.
No.
It doesn't have to be beautiful. But I do think it is nice to see who you're learning from.
Yeah.
I want a little introduction from you at the beginning. Talk, you know, short, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, have a practice. You'll probably end up doing that 5 times, and the first 4 will be a bit rubbish and you'll feel a bit awkward. But by the end of it, you'll get one that you think, okay, that's good enough. And most people who are going to be taking that course, they know you already. They already like you and what you're doing and what you're sharing. So people are going to be forgiving. And your notes say, you know, be your audience, be yourself, be honest, accessible and inclusive. And that is not about making it perfect.
No. I shoot the intro in my studio. So if they get bored of looking at me, there's all the things to see around.
That's good.
And then I often, you know, I come back and show my partner, and I go, do I look like that? Do I really sit with my chin up? Is my, you know, and you just got to let it go, because, you know,
isn't
when you're studying in front of a class,
you notice all these quirks about you, like my mouth goes down on my left hand side, and it's always my right eyebrow that's going up, or whatever it is. But who cares? It is what it is.
No, if you're too self conscious, you'll never make the films, will you? So
no,
and it's got to go out there. So yeah, just get over that one.
Okay, so we've covered, I think, don't teach everything. Going on courses, looking and learning, I think that's valuable anyway for your own learning and development always. The first time I did it on a real in-person course, it felt like a huge step to leap the family. And then since then, I've done at least one thing every year and online as well.
Yeah.
And at the moment, obviously, we're a little bit limited to only doing things online. So see what else is out there. See how other people do it. Find out what platforms they're on. You know, you will understand how you can put something together when you've taken somebody else's course online. I'm going to do your concertina workshop now. I've got the concertina book I bought, and I'm a little bit scared of it. My only thing up until now has been, do I choose the allotment or the buildings one? And now I think, I don't care.
No. I don't know, for you.
You can tell me.
Either.
You know, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I chose themes. But really, the things I'm doing, you can apply to whatever theme you want, you know.
Yeah.
The buildings doesn't have to be buildings. But it was quite geometric, you know, whereas the allotments one is much more natural and scribbly. Yeah. But yeah, it's the techniques. And in each, there's 3 courses now, and I'm going to go away and work on 2 more. But in each one, I'm giving different techniques. So it's, you know, 1 or 2 might overlap, but each one has got different techniques. So if you do all 3, you've got a whole range of things you can apply to, even to your paintings, you know.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is, I'm sure that there are things in there that I probably do or know anyway.
Yeah.
But the point is, sometimes it's nice just to log on and watch a lesson and do what you're told.
Yes.
I mean, so much of our learning as artists is self-directed. Sometimes it's just nice to have somebody tell you what to do or push you in a slightly different direction. Yeah. So one of your points, which I think is a great one and perhaps is a little bit trickier in the online space, but let's talk about it in reality, because we're assuming that this is going to come back and people will be listening to this later. So the point is, when to push and when to step back. What do you look for?
well, as a yoga teacher as well, breathing, you know, you can often hear the huffing and puffing and and I, you know, I often say to the whole group, well, we're about to approach the sulky state where we don't like it, you know, but that's great because we're going to push through that, push past that. And it's, if you see someone's uncomfortable, you can see by their body language, yes, if they're not happy. And then going back and finding bits that they do like, connecting to maybe their own work, often looking at photographs on their iPhone or something that brings it back. Usually people are very keen to tell you the bits they don't like, but also, you know, we have to pick out the bits they do like. And just giving a few personal words to push them on, you know, and it's usually fine. Good tea break, start, go back to it, look at it afresh, look at other examples in the room.
Yeah.
But of course, everybody wants to do what somebody else is doing, don't they? They always like somebody else's more than theirs. And then we often section a piece, their favourite piece or favourite pieces.
Okay, so you're looking for the prompts within their own work.
Yeah,
and they might get some re-infused in it.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you say, and I think you're right, we spend a lot of time, oh, I don't like that bit, or that bit didn't go well, or...
Yeah.
Is there anybody who you've had on a course that you haven't managed to have that kind of turnaround? Or do you think that given the time period... I mean, I'm guessing maybe there are people who just... Have you ever had somebody turn up for day one and then not bother coming back?
No. What I do have to say to them is on day one, you're not taking your books home tonight. You have to leave them here because they'll all go home and work for another 5 hours and then come back the next day exhausted because they're so confused.
That is a great... You see, that would never have occurred to me. That's brilliant.
That's a good idea.
No, that's the school teacher. You know, you're not taking your books. So they come back fresh the next day. There's maybe once somebody had put so much on there and it was thick with gesso and paint and I couldn't really see where I could pull it back. But then she showed me some of her own work and it was very much the way she worked.
Yeah.
And she was saying to me, this is fine. I know what I'm going to do with this. And then the next day, day two, I think she covered it all with something really dark. And I'm thinking, God, you know, what am I going to do? But she pulled bits, but she was happy. You know, it might not suit it the way I thought things should be going, but she was totally happy with what she was doing. And it was, I suppose it's finding things that the participants can connect to, why it's going the way it is. And if it's really, they're really sulky and not liking it, then we just gesso, put some more ink on. And then they've got all that history there to work with. And we pull it back. We sort it. No, we're good.
but that's a very good point as well about... how I think maybe if you're leading something, right back to what I was saying at the beginning, you feel like all the responsibility of giving the information perhaps is on you. And I'm sure that this is a mistake that I would make or have made. But actually in that scenario, you're learning just as much. It's a really good lesson in humbling and... I think what can happen, and again, I noticed this, there was one person that I'm thinking of the workshop that I did in Yorkshire, and this is because I'm not experienced in this. I was having this feeling of like, I've got to deliver, and I don't understand I didn't understand because I don't have the experience of getting... I knew that I wanted everybody to have a very different and individual experience. And I wasn't quite sure how to do that until halfway through one of the days. I did exactly what you said. And I said, well, show me some of your other work that you're doing. And then it all fitted into place. How she worked, what her interests were. And it's going back to asking those questions again. So not feeling like it's all on you. It's not one-way traffic. Is what I'm getting to in a really long and mumbly and roundabout way. It's not one-way traffic. It's a two-way thing. So if we then take it into how we do that online, where we can't hear somebody huffing and puffing, we can't see them throwing their brush down in frustration, we're relying on them to come back and say, actually, I got stuck with this.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I've done with that is... And some people do drift off and you just don't hear from them again online. But I've been really careful to try and build the Facebook group that accompanies the course to be as friendly and supportive as possible so that people feel like they can say, I don't know what's happening. And just like Karen said, the other participants, there's always a few leaders who tend to jump in and start being really encouraging and start giving help, even when you're not there to do it. So that's the only other thing I found, is to do regular live streams in my online courses where I'm constantly saying, it's okay if you feel like this, and it's okay if you're fed up, and it's okay if it looks rubbish. So it's a lot to do with the lead. That's where you do have a responsibility, I think. You really do have to just make a community where people feel like it's okay to fail, and they're not going to be laughed at or looked down on. And that's where I think the leader really is responsible for that.
Well, what about all those, when I set up the Facebook group, I thought people would share, you know, this is stage one, I tried this here, but of course they're all putting up their beautiful sketchbooks, their final sketchbooks, which is stunning. And then I meet people at art fairs and things, and they say, oh yeah, I'm doing your course, but I don't put anything online. You know, you've always got the quiet people who are ticking along, doing your workshops, but you can't reach out to them unless they reach out to you. That's an area that's, you know,
I wonder if this is where email comes into it, and if you've got a course that's online, whether you can send out an email however many days after people purchased it, and just say, you know, how's it going, let me know, because there's an opportunity there for some, you know, one-to-one interaction. It's a reminder, if they've let it drop, that it's still there. This is where you log in. But it's also an opportunity for them to say, actually, I fell off at this point.
Yeah. Good idea. I don't do that at the moment. So that, you know, they pop up, they've signed up, and then I see them in the Facebook page, or they sometimes message me through the Coursecraft. But that would be nice, I think, to feel they're involved more as well.
Yeah,
good idea.
And again, I think it's that two-way learning. You might get feedback from, you might start to notice that there are a number of people who are at particular points, and then it's a way that you can improve it, isn't it? One thing that we haven't spoken about, which I think might be helpful before we finish, is just different ways here then to collect fees and payments if this is something paid. So we've touched a little bit on the idea of asking for a deposit, even if this is something that doesn't exist yet. I have also done things in the past on a pay what you want basis, which is quite nice. And the way that I've done that is I just have a paypal.me address, and you can create that from any PayPal account. There are options to do that, and then it just sends somebody to a website, and somebody can just, so mine is paypal.me/, I think it's just /Alice Sheridan, and when people type that into their browser or you send them a link, you can do a number of ways. So that leaves it totally open. So if you're doing something, you could ask for a donation or a pay what you want amount, and people can put in whatever they can spend, think it's worth, whatever. But you can also make it specific. So it's easier than creating a PayPal button. So you could have paypal.me/Alice Sheridan/37, and then it would come up, please pay Alice Sheridan £37, and they pay you with their normal PayPal. So it's simpler than creating a PayPal button. So that's quite a nice, easy little tip for things. I think other than that, though, PayPal is the easiest, or bank transfer, email, bank transfer, no fees on that one.
I think it depends as well, because there's two different types of courses we're talking about, isn't there? There's the ones like I teach and like Alice is talking about, where you're going to be live talking to people. But then there's the kind that Karen does, where it's ongoing for sale forever, called, they usually call them evergreen courses. And so people are coming in and just buying, and she doesn't even necessarily know until she gets the notification. So what are you using for that, Karen?
It's the, so it's the company's Coursecraft, and they take a small percentage, and they can then pay by PayPal or Stripe. So that's taken out my hands, but they are taking their percentage. And then of course, PayPal take their commission as well.
Yeah.
I forgot about that when I priced it.
Okay. So that's a very personal tip, actually, isn't it? So I think a lot of people start on Teachable, and Teachable also take a slice of commission off. I mean, this goes back to some of the costs just involved in doing this. You know, we talked about Zoom earlier. If you're going to do this, it's worth paying $11.99 a month for it to get those larger groups if you want. Same thing, just remember that if people are paying you via PayPal, there will be a slice taken out of it. So build that into your calculation.
And actually also, if they're paying you from other countries, I asked everybody to pay me the first time I did it through PayPal Me in pounds, because if they paid me in their own currency, then I also had a big fee for the conversion.
Yeah.
And some people still paid me in dollars, particularly Americans just tend to pay in dollars. And so then I would get a lot less than the actual amount. And because it was the first time I did it, I was like, okay, well, whatever, I'll just leave it. But that is something to be aware of, doing it through PayPal.
And the good thing with Coursecraft, it is priced in pounds. So then it does, you know, they pay whatever, but it comes out at the English pound price.
It keeps your accounting a little bit more.
Yes, there's another one.
I think most of these, if you're doing the stage where you're doing a video in sections and it's going to be online, they usually have their own payment system and you just kind of link up with yours. And again, it's one of those things that falls under the umbrella of, oh, this is scary and I don't know how to link it up. But actually, you follow the instructions, you create an account, you make them talk to each other, and once it's done, it's done.
Can I just say, with Coursecraft as well, you can go on there, you can sign up, you can create your whole course paying nothing. It's only when you start to publish it.
Oh, that's good.
And it's a very logical, easy, if you've ever been a teacher, you know, it's like lesson plans. You slot in your videos, you slot in your comments. It's all well laid out. It is a standard layout, but it is very easy if you're a beginner for making courses, and it can be as long or as short as you want and whatever price you want to charge. You know, it was the ease of that that helped me get on board.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the fact that you can start it, have a play around, Ken, you're not committing to anything. I mean, I operate my thing on Kajabi, which is it's a much bigger upfront payment to keep going each month. You know, and there's still, you know, the deductions that come out of the payment system. But even they had a 28-day free trial. So, you know, you can go on, you can play around. Do I like this interface? Do I like how it's laid out? Is it logical for me? So it's a good idea to, I think, to test run these different platforms. And that's what I did with Teachable. And Teachable, for me, I just didn't like some of the way that it was set up.
Yeah.
So it's personal preference thing.
Yeah.
There we go. Well, if we have anything else that we think of that is going to be useful and helpful, we will add it to the show notes before this comes out. And all three of us will have a post about this on our Facebook pages. So Karen, where can people find you on Facebook?
It's Karen Stamper Collage is my Facebook page.
Karen Stamper Collage.
Collage, yeah.
And on Instagram?
It's Karen Stamper Art.
Okay, so you can find Karen's Instagram account. I'm sure you can find it via her website. So what's your website? I hope you know this.
This one is Karen Stamper Collage. That's
Karen
my
Stamper
website.
Collage as well. Okay.
You
can find everything there, but we will all have a post about this on our Facebook pages as well. So you can come and comment, see what other people are contributing. And, you know, hopefully this will be a good and helpful conversation. So before we finish, we normally end with a what's inspired you this week question, which I wasn't sure that we were going to do this week, but let's find something.
Okay, what's inspired me is the kids next door. Teenagers willing to come out and do stupid dances and yoga in the garden, and they made us all smile. So they really inspired me, and we all felt really uplifted. And, you know, teenagers usually don't want to hang out with us dancing in the garden.
Amazing. That's pretty good going.
Especially the bad dad dancing. That was quite good.
Louise?
Mine's my studio, because it now has electric. I switch the switches on, lights come on. It has been plastered and decorated. I spent a very long day painting it, and the water is now going in. and that is quite a big job. And my builder actually went out yesterday and bought himself a new digger so that he can dig the drain because his old one broke. And yeah, that, so
I bet that was a fun conversation.
Well, between, I'm not paying for the digging.
No, I know, but I bet he was really happy about that.
No, well, I think he's been wanting one for quite a long time.
Oh, okay.
I think it's a, you know, man toy thing. So anyway, drains are going in, and so I should be able to paint in there probably a week, I would think.
Okay. Wow.
All the painting walls still need building. And
are you documenting the making of this studio?
I'm taking pictures. I have taken photos and I've got little films and I'll put it all together at the end. But it is an amazing thing that he's built. Somebody said to me when they came to see it, oh, I thought it was going to be like a shed. And it's like a gallery inside at the moment. It's so beautiful, these smooth white walls and skylights. Now, it won't look like that. It's not going to look like that for very long. It's going to be filthy and covered in paint. But for now.
Anyway. I remember when mine looked like that when it was empty, and then you put your furniture in and you put your tables in and it shrinks.
Yes, exactly.
It's so true. It's so true. Okay, so mine is going to be my daughter and her school. So they have been practicing for the last 10 days, online learning, Google Hangouts. That's something we haven't spoken about. Okay. I've never used them, but they have been practicing lessons on Google Hangouts where the teacher is there and live streaming to them all. And yesterday she was at home. Today she's gone in for her last day of school, but yesterday she was at home and she decided that she was going to get up and put on her school uniform on the top half so she felt schooly, and then she was going to wear comfy trousers on the bottom half. So we had this kind of weird 50-50 split, and I kind of thought that's quite fun. I quite like that kind of, some of it's normal, some of it's a little bit of adaptation. So that was quite a nice way, I thought, to be dealing with it. So it has been lovely. It's been lovely having you here. Thank you so much. And if you are inspired by Karen's courses, go and have a look, join her mailing list. And then when she takes some of more of these in-person things online, you will be there and you will hear about it. Thank you so much. Bye-bye, Karen.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.